finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
In the true crime space, we often talk about escalation, how someone doesn't just wake up one day and commit an atrocity. It's usually a slow build, a psychological rot. It slowly spreads. And if you know what to look for, you can almost feel the tension tightening before it snaps. In the next part of our conversation with investigative journalist Howard Bloom and former FBI behavioral expert Robin Dreek, we're going to go right into the heart of that escalation and the dark obsession that may have lit the fuse. We're talking about Brian Koberger, not just the man who entered the King Road house with a knife, but the man who may have spent months, even years, mentally preparing for it. Not just studying criminology, but quietly fantasizing about becoming the very predator his textbooks described. At the center of it all, one name keeps rising to the surface, Madison Mogan. Howard lays out a theory, and let's be clear, it's a deeply informed one, that Maddie wasn't just a random victim. She may have been the object of a toxic, one-sided fixation, someone who symbolized everything Koberger wasn't, confident, connected, desired, someone whose very existence in his warped mind had to be erased in order for him to feel powerful again. Now, did Koberger subscribe to full-blown incel ideology? Maybe not in the online forum sense, but in the mindset, the resentment, the perceived rejection, the weaponized inferiority, he checks a lot of boxes. And what's more disturbing is that he seemed to treat this act not just as revenge, but as a twisted experiment, a case study, a performance piece for the professor he admired, Dr. Catherine Ramsland, who literally wrote the books on serial killers. This isn't just about murder, it's about identity, transformation, a man so obsessed with killers that he didn't just study them, he allegedly tried to become one and did. I want to ask about the angle on that a lot of people, including us, have been speculating on as it ties to who you believe is the primary target, Howard, Madison Mogan, but connecting that to the incel ideology that we've spoken of in the past. Obviously, there's a lot of degrees of the incel ideology. Some will argue, well, you need to be part of this community. I kind of feel you can just have the mindset. It doesn't really matter if you're in the community. Or not. Do you believe Koberger was in that mindset, that incel mindset of...
Well, I mean, I'm no psychologist. Sure. I think the term has lots of specific meanings. What I see is that Koberger saw himself as an outsider. Mm-hmm. I think he very much wanted to be part of the group of young kids that were hanging out at the King Road house. He would have liked to have been like them. He would have liked to have been exuberant, good-looking, playful. He would have liked to have been part of a crowd. Mm-hmm. And yet he was a loner, and he found their fun, the way they were able to navigate through life without any apparent problems, without the internal torture that he was going through. He saw that as a constant rebuke to who he was and to what his fate was. So ultimately, because of that, he decided, I can't let the object of his fascination, Matty Mogan, live in the world if I'm not going to be part of it. So for my survival, I have to get rid of her to ensure my own continued ability to exist in the world as I'm living.
How do you believe his initial fascination, his initial even awareness that Matty Mogan existed, began? Where did that all stem from?
Well, you know, for the record, there's no proof that he followed any of these young victims on Facebook. There's no proof that he ever spoke to Matty when he went to the Mad Greek restaurant in downtown Moscow. What I believe, and I think we'll find that maybe there was some interaction between Matty and Koberger, but it wouldn't take much to set off a spark in him. He was someone, as we said, who obsessions become easily. A heroin addict able to kick heroin. A poor student able to become a graduate student going for his PhD. A grossly obese and able to lose 125 pounds and turn his body into a fortress. He went from swings and swings, this obsessive behavior, and something about Matty, something he saw in her, lighted a fuse, a dangerous fuse in him. Her blonde good looks, her exuberance, her joviality, and he did not want her to exist in this world. He felt her presence was a constant rebuke to the sort of isolation, to his internment in his own psychosis.
Was the invasion of the home invasion there that night, where he goes in and eventually kills all four of these people, for someone who seemingly really planned this thing out, was he not extremely rolling the dice by entering that home and then finding all these people in there? Was that an oversight on his part, or do you think that was something he might have been prepared for and was ready to deal with?
I think it didn't enter into his thoughts at that moment. I mean, let's go back to that night.
Yeah.
He circles the house, not once, not twice, but three different times. Each of those three times, he drives off and yet returns like a magnet. Many people have said he was stalking the house that night. I don't think that was the case. I think he was trying to work up the will, become the monster he wanted to become. He finally parks the car, turns off the ignition. I think it took, you know, the strength or Hercules for him to turn off that ignition and to walk down this sort of icy slope with the knife in his hand and enter the kitchen door. I think if he had been thinking clearly, if he had been focused on what was happening that night, he would have seen the row of cars in front that immediately signals that there are, you know, four or five people there. He would have seen the door dash driver, and he would have, you know, dismissed his plan, come back another night. I don't think he focused at all on the door dash driver, on the cars in front. I think he was locked up in his own armory of hate. He was fixated on finding the will to become this person he envisioned himself becoming, and going for his one target, who lived up on the third floor. Matty Mogan, if he wanted other targets or just any old random target in the house, he could, the bedrooms that he passed by on the second floor, he could have gone into any of them. But he goes directly, as it seems, into Maddie's room. And then when he enters the room, all his previous plans fall apart, because not only is Matty there, but Kaylee is there too. And now he has to deal with two young women. Kaylee is fighting back, as her father said, like a tiger. He literally busts her face with his fists, you know, viciously, horrifically. And in this, all this confusion and in this rage, he leaves the knife sheath behind. And that's what ultimately does him in. Callie's fighting back and is leaving the knife sheath behind.
Robin?
Yeah, Howard, that's all the focus and the hypothesis with Matty is really interesting, because, you know, you look at the behaviors he had, which a large part of them do kind of insinuate, hey, he's on the trajectory of becoming a serial killer. And some, including myself, hypothesized he would have continued. But at the same time, though, there's other data points that are saying maybe not. So, based on the fact that you think he was vengeful against Maddie about her existence because she's everything he's not. Do you think he would have killed again if he took out her, or would he find another place to place that kind of rage and resent on someone else? Because a lot of times they're fantasizing, you know, serial killer will fantasize about what they're doing, the individual, keep trophies, you know, and that, and this, again, there's elements of this that are just a little off from that. So what are your thoughts?
Again, everything I say should be put through the mirror of that, you know, I got a B- in Psych 1 at Stanford, and the professor didn't even think I deserved a B.
But so, you got reps.
I think he had transformed himself that night. I think he had become, you know, the thumbs up picture. That was the new man he wanted to be. I think the thumbs up picture showed he was proud and enjoyed this transformation. And I think he would have not very long after this night, again, tried to find that sort of ebullience, that sort of pride in who he could be. And he would have killed again. Everyone, you know, you can say he was on Amazon looking to reorder another knife so that in case the police came looking, he would have the evidence there. I think he was trying to buy another murder weapon. I think he enjoyed, quote unquote, the experience in a sick way so much that he wanted to do it again.
And that's what really makes me wonder about a lot of this toxic infatuation that he had with Maddie. This idea that, I mean, he did go back onto Amazon. We do know that to look at getting another knife, never actually made the purchase. One of the things I wondered about very early on in this was, is this a crime where it was, okay, he's going to take the advantage of having an intoxic infatuation about some woman, Maddie Mogan is who it turned out to be, but he was also going to use that in a way to learn, in a way to study how killers function, in a way to be the best that he could possibly be. And then one day maybe stop or maybe keep going, but be in the shadows because he wouldn't get caught in his mind. But was it because it someday he wanted to teach about this or he wanted to be taught about, or maybe a little bit of both, where he's the only one wiser to who everyone's teaching about while he's in the very same room?
I mean, you raise some very interesting questions, and I've tried to answer them a bit in my own mind. Mm-hmm. And I keep on going back to when Koberger was a graduate student at DeSalle. He sent out a questionnaire to convicts in prison, trying to figure out what they were thinking. How did they commit the crime? How did they get there? How did they get away? I think he was trying to learn, and he would have all those questions on that questionnaire. He would have asked himself and did ask himself after the murders had occurred, and they would have informed him to how to proceed next time. I bet, you know, next time he would have made a plan in his head not to leave a knife sheath behind. That he knew was his mistake. He also later learned on that they were looking for a white Hyundai Elantra. So maybe you don't use your own car. Maybe you try to walk to the victim's house or you look for surveillance cameras. But I think he was learning. I think he was also trying to, on another level, he had studied forensic psychology with Dr. Catherine Ramsland. Mm-hmm. Dr. Catherine Ramsland was his advisor at DeSalle University for the 4 years he was there as an undergraduate and also for his graduate program, his master's degree. I think he had a strange relationship with her. He wanted to, I believe, impress her, to show her that he had learned. He was very... he admired the fact that she had actually gone into the belly of the beast. She'd gone into prisons to interview suspects. He wanted to do something more. He wanted to become the beast. And this is what he'd become. And in a way, in a strange, twisted way, so somewhat akin to the way John Hinckley had tried to assassinate President Reagan or Jodie Foster, who he had never met. Koberger's crime was in his sort of homoerotic homage to Dr. Ramsland. Again, that's my theory. Mm-hmm. It's entirely speculative, but I think it might be worth looking into.
This is where the case gets darker than dark, not just what Brian Koberger may have done, but why he may have done it. Because what we're looking at here isn't just a random act of violence or even a revenge fantasy. It might be something colder, something calculated. Howard said it all right, outright. He believes Koberger didn't just fall into this. He trained for it, obsessed over it, tested himself, learned from it. And what's more disturbing? It looks like he was already preparing for the next round. Think about it. A man who once sent questionnaires to convicted killers asking how they got away with murder, how they felt about it. Now running a real-world simulation of those same questions. What went wrong? What could be improved? What kind of knife works best? Should I walk next time instead of drive? He wasn't just fantasizing. He was auditioning his own crime in real time. And Maddie, she wasn't just the fixation. She was, in his mind, the variable, the trigger, the one whose light made his darkness unbearable. And when he couldn't be part of her world, he may have decided to destroy it instead. Robbie made another critical observation. This wasn't a sudden explosion. It was an inevitable endpoint of a behavioral arc. Koberger may not have left trophies behind, but the digital trail, the Amazon searches, the reenactments in his mind, that's the footprint of someone looking to escalate, to improve, to do it again. The Ramsland angle, that's the part that lingers. Because if this was his twisted homage, if this was a way to show her he could walk into the belly of the beast and come back out, then we're talking about a man who saw murder not as a crime, but as an achievement, a resume line in blood. Will we ever know the full truth? Probably not. But here's what we do know. Koberger wasn't just interested in killers. He was fascinated by the power they represented. And on that night in that house with a knife, he may have finally believed he'd become one. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comment section. On YouTube is where you can do that. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube to find us there. Be sure to leave us your thoughts in the comment section on Apple Podcasts, or rather press subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of the cases we follow for you right here. And do check us out on YouTube so you can join in those conversations. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.